Hi everyone, my name is Elizabeth Bast. I am an internal medicine physician. I run our long COVID clinic down at the Miami VA. And thank you for joining me today to learn a bit more about autonomic dysfunction and long COVID as a part of the Council of Medical Specialty Society's Long COVID Educational Webinar Series. So, dysautonomia is an umbrella term that is used to describe various disorders of malfunction within the autonomic nervous system. In the context of long COVID, the issues related to dysautonomia that we see are POTS, orthostatic intolerance, and orthostatic hypotension. While these syndromes center on the cardiovascular component of the autonomic nervous system, it is important to remember that the autonomic nervous system has numerous functions and therefore dysfunction causes a wide range of symptoms. There are also a number of other syndromes associated with dysautonomia that are not associated with long COVID. POTS is widely documented in long COVID and is defined by an excess heart rate increase of more than 30 beats per minute within 10 minutes of standing, or an excessive heart rate increase of more than 120 while standing within 10 minutes. This is in the absence of orthostatic hypotension. It's important to note that this may not occur on every clinic visit. Symptoms may be intermittent. Postural symptoms without tachycardia or orthostatic intolerance may occur in which patients feel noticeably worse with upright positioning, but do not meet the previously mentioned criteria. Finally, orthostatic hypotension is defined by a decrease in either the systolic blood pressure of more than 20 millimeters of mercury or the diastolic blood pressure by more than 10 millimeters of mercury. POTS may be further subcategorized into different areas related to the pathophysiology, such as hyperadrenergic, hypovolemic, or neuropathic. It's worth noting there is a clear association between dysautonomia and small fiber neuropathy outside of long COVID, and that small fiber neuropathy, for example, may impair vasoconstriction, leading to neuropathic POTS versus hyperadrenergic POTS, in which there is excessive adrenergic tone, and this may result in dramatic increases in heart rate with those postural changes. So, how common is this? We don't really know. There are a wide range of studies, and it's difficult to estimate due to differences in patient populations across long COVID, differences in screening and testing techniques that are used. But in one study, they reported up to 67% of patients with long COVID showing evidence of dysautonomia. So we do know that it is common. So, how does a patient present in clinic? What would make you think of dysautonomia and consider further testing? The predominant symptoms are dizziness or lightheadedness, as well as palpitations and occasionally chest pain. And then, of course, they may have other accompanying symptoms that are related to other functions of the autonomic nervous system, such as dry eyes and dry mouth, changes in sweating related to the pseudomotor system, blue hands and feet. This is a particularly specific symptom, although not always seen, related to vasomotor symptoms, and then more generalized symptoms that are common across multiple syndromes but relate to the autonomic nervous system, such as changes in bowel or bladder function, generalized fatigue, and weakness. Further evaluation would be a more specific autonomic review of symptoms, and this can also be done using a standardized questionnaire, such as the Composite Autonomic Symptom Score, also known as the COMPASS 31. The gold standard for objective testing for autonomic function is generally a tilt table testing. However, this is expensive. It requires specialized expertise that is just not available in many places. A simpler form of autonomic screening, frequently used in clinic, is the 10-minute active stand test, in which vitals are assessed during active standing after several minutes of supine resting position. This test requires minimal technology or infrastructure. However, it does require some time, and it may yield information beyond just a diagnosis. For example, a blunted heart rate response increase in a patient with classic orthostatic hypotension makes a neurogenic cause more likely as driving their symptoms, although a patient's cardiac history must always be considered. Many clinics and patient groups also use a test called the NASOLINE test, also termed the passive stand test. And there may be advantages in terms of patient support against a wall and safety, especially for severely symptomatic patients. However, this test is not considered as well validated against the tilt table testing and is therefore an area of some controversy right now. Other autonomic testing may include pseudomotor testing, such as the QSART, However, again, this is really not widely available clinically. And testing for related syndromes such as small fiber neuropathy via skin biopsy can be considered. And if there are changes in other areas such as GI motility, motility testing, et cetera, should be looked into. So once you've determined a patient has dysautonomia contributing to their symptom profile, treatments address the underlying pathophysiology and some of those subtypes that were discussed earlier. Non-pharmacologic treatment is generally the cornerstone of management, and in many cases, non-pharmacologic management is sufficient for significant symptom improvement. So this includes first stopping any contributing medications such as diuretics that decrease blood volume, increasing volume expansion by increasing salt and fluid intake, as well as compression garments for the lower extremities, the legs, and particularly the abdomen to help further support the cardiovascular system. Counterpressure maneuvers may help with symptom control during position changes, and recumbent training is a part of a complete autonomic rehab with a stepwise progression to upright activity can be tremendously beneficial. Ideally, this should be done in the context of supervision by a trained therapist. In those for whom non-pharmacologic management is not sufficient, there are several categories of pharmacologic therapy that have been used. However, some may feel more comfortable deferring these treatments to colleagues with more significant experience in this arena, as these are not all commonly used medications. However, these categories include volume expanders such as fludrocortisone, heart rate modulators such as beta blockers, and SA nodal blockers like efavirenz, vasoconstrictors such as midodrine, and medications working on the cholinergic system such as pyridostigmine. There are a number of active clinical trials looking at a number of these medications as well, and additional resources will be linked for those wishing to learn more. Finally, it is worth mentioning there is a strong overlap between several syndromes. Previously mentioned, the overlap between small fiber neuropathy and autonomic dysfunction. Orthostatic intolerance is also very common in patients with myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, and there may also be increased rates of hypermobility syndromes and mast cell activation seen across these patient groups. Again, this is all very much an area of active research. Additional resources are available here at cmss.org. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.